WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you've been posting your most irrational major decision and whether it worked out. We're going to get to those in just a minute with the author Jonah Lehrer, great name, no relation. Now, A-Rod knew he wasn't taking Tic Tacs. What was he thinking? Sully Sullenberger somehow knew that he could land that plane in the Hudson, even against the air traffic controller's advice. Lots of decisions in the news, some understandable, some inexplicable, some rational, and some pure gut. What were they thinking? Well, our next guest, Jonah Lehrer, might know. His first book, Proust Was a Neuroscientist, was really interesting. You may have heard him here or as a regular contributor to WNYC's Radio Lab and The Takeaway. And he's back with his new book, How We Decide. It's out now from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. It explores what happens in our brain when we make a decision and just what the mix of instinct, gut, reason, and indecision looks like at the neural level, and even when he thinks irrational decisions are the better ones and when rational decisions are. So we'll get into that. I saw him last at the Lehrer family reunion where he, Jim, and I all got together and swapped stories. No, not really. None of us are related. But Jonah Lehrer, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we can do this on the phones, too. What's the most irrational decision you've ever made, and did it work out? 212-433-WNYC. That's not our pledge number. That's our on-air line, 212-433-9692. What's the most irrational decision you've ever made, and did it work out? And is it that simple, Jonah, that some of us tend, as a matter of our personality types, to make decisions with our guts and others think them through?
Well, I think we all have different decision-making styles, but I think the truth is everybody can both be rational. We all have a prefrontal cortex, which is the center of rational thought in the brain, and we all experience these profound emotions. And the key is really to know when to rely on each of these two distinct decision-making systems.
So, for example, you actually recommend in the book sometimes one, sometimes the other for different circumstances. And to contrast two very current examples, you say when buying a house, intuition is good. When picking a stock, not so much.
Yes. Well, one of the reasons thinking too much about a house you buy might be bad is that this was an experiment done by researchers at the University of the Netherlands. And what they gave people a very familiar option. You can have the four-bedroom house in the suburbs, but this four-bedroom house comes with a relatively long commute, a 45-minute commute. Or you can have the three-bedroom house or two-bedroom house, these smaller apartment in the city with a shorter commute. And what you find is that the more people think about these two options, the more obsessed they become with that extra bedroom. They think about how Grandpa Joe could stay in the extra bedroom during Christmas and how their sister could visit in the summer. And that extra bedroom becomes more and more important, even though you may only use it once or twice a year. Meanwhile, they focus less on the commute. But studies show that commuting is very painful and makes people very unhappy.
So day your brain, in, day out lifestyle.
Exactly. So your brain misweighs these variables. And so thinking too much makes people more likely to choose the house in the suburbs, even though it may actually make them less happy overall. When it comes to stocks, I think one of the reasons our instincts and emotions lead us astray is the stock market's a classic case of a random system. There's a random walk. The past movement of any particular stock doesn't predict its future movement. And so when the problem with your emotions is that your emotions don't know how to deal with randomness. They search for patterns and imagine patterns, but there's no pattern to find.
Is it really random, though? If a company – I realize there's some horrible examples out there right now, but if a company – made good business decisions and had a good market in the past. Isn't that something more than a random predictor of whether they're going to do well in the future?
Sure. The problem is, I think lots and lots of studies have shown that people who think they've solved the stock market, be it hedge fund managers or mutual fund managers, they tend to underperform the S&P 500. It's the very, very rare example that people like Warren Buffett, and the reason he's so famous is because there are so few of them who can actually consistently beat the market. And even people who seem to consistently beat the market, then it turns out that may just been a lucky streak.
Then again, we have this on our website posted by Emily. About 15 years ago, I got a fortune cookie that suggested it was a good time to buy stocks. So I gave it a try and bought Apple. Got lots of money, still ahead, even in the depressed market. Food was pretty good, too.
Well, you know, that's as good a way to pick stocks as any other. I think it's important to be rational in the sense that you shouldn't trust your powerful instincts. But because you're talking about a random system here, it's important not to pretend like you know you've solved the stock market.
Right. Now, of course, the fortune cookie told her to invest. It didn't tell her to invest in Apple.
Yes.
Janet in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Janet.
Hi. My husband and I bought a house on an impulse. We weren't even in the market. And we got a call from a friend who was a real estate broker one day. She said, "Are you looking?" I said, "No." She said, "Too bad, because there's a perfect house for you." And my husband went up and took a picture of it. And I said, "That's the one."
Wow. When was that?
2001, fortunately.
So an irrational decision, and it worked out.
Sounds like a good decision to me. I think one of the counterintuitive implications of a lot of this research is that it's the really hard, complicated decisions, the decisions like buying a house, decisions that involve lots of variables and require lots of information, that most benefit from a more emotional, instinctive thought process. That's simply because the rational brain is great, can do many things very well, but it's very limited and bounded. You give it too many facts and you overwhelm it.
All right. You want to hear an irrational decision that worked out?
Please.
Nancy in Soho. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. Good morning. I met a man 32 years ago in England, and we moved in together within the first hour, and in October this year, it'll be our 33rd anniversary.
How did you make the decision to move in with him within an hour?
Well, I don't know that it was a conscious decision, but when I woke up the next morning, I realized I had moved in with him.
It was a little, you were homeless, he had a place kind of thing.
No, we both had homes.
Yes.
I think it had
love
a lot.
At first sight.
Yes,
something
I think so.
At first sight.
Yeah, I think so. I think also that he was from America. I was from America, and there was a sense of security.
Nancy, thank you very much. How about the Malcolm Gladwell book *Blink*, where he seems to argue that the more intuitive, more irrational decision is better in so many situations, and that we give too much credit to rational decision making. Do you take a more, they're kind of 50-50 approach than he does?
Yeah, I think the key is really balance. The key isn't always blinking or always trying to be rational. And I think what you get by looking at the brain, by looking at how your brain cells actually work together to make a decision, is it allows you to better understand which situations most benefit from which type of thought process. I think one way to look at the brain is it's like a Swiss Army knife. It's stuffed full of all these different mental tools, each of which is very well suited to a particular task. So then the key becomes not just trying to always blink and always trust your gut or always trying to be deliberate and logical and rational. The key is really tailoring your thought process to specific situations.
And you spoke to many kinds of deciders for this book. One was an airline pilot. You say his epiphany in the cockpit saved hundreds of lives. And this was not Sully Sullenberger, was it?
No, this was Captain Al Haynes, who's He was in a flight in the late 80s that lost total hydraulic power. So he was at 30,000 feet over Iowa, and all of a sudden he couldn't control any part of the plane. And so he had to invent on the spot a new method of controlling a plane that resulted in differential thrust. And that allowed him to steer the plane back to an airport. And some lives were lost, but he saved hundreds of lives simply because he was able to land the plane. One reason I talk about pilots in the book is I think pilots really practice decision making. In particular, they practice something called deliberate calm, which is the reason they go in flight simulators and the reason, Captain Sully talked about how important flight simulators were to his decision that day, is because they teach you how to control your emotions, how to deal with these very stressful feelings, how to make sure your fear doesn't turn into panic. And I think what allowed him to make the decision to land on the Hudson that day was that he realized that his fear wasn't going to save him, that, as he put it, turmoil on the inside, calm on the outside. And being such a deliberate, rational thinker in such stressful situations, that requires practice.
So what's the end goal of knowing all this about our decisions? Are we able to change the way we operate? operate?
Well, I think the crucial component is something called metacognition, which is a fancy word that means something very simple, which is thinking about thinking. And the fact that humans are capable of being metacognitive, of reflecting on our own thought process, really allows us to tailor our thought process to the task at hand. So we can think about, what kind of decision am I making? Am I choosing a cereal in the supermarket or a toothpaste, or am I choosing a car or a house or a stock? How should I make this decision? And then we can rely on the specific system in our brain that is best suited to that particular decision.
Are you looking at our new president as a decision maker of one sort or another?
You know, it's obviously tough to diagnose a president when you haven't met him. But I think there are lots of reports that suggest he is pretty metacognitive. He is thinking about thinking. And I think one thing in particular that I think encourages me about Obama's decision-making style is that he seems to be aware of what psychologists call the certainty trap, which is the fact that the brain is very prone to false bouts of certainty, to being convinced that Iraq has WMD or that, you know, subprime mortgage securities are safe, risk-free investments, stuff like that. And so I think he's really taken pains to surround himself with dissenting views and dissonant information.
Although David Brooks had a column yesterday expressing skepticism about the Obama stimulus plan because he says it's too rational. It assumes that if you press the right economic buttons, people will respond in rational, predictable ways with their spending and saving and job creation and everything else, but that people don't actually act that way in real life. Do you see that?
Well, this gets back to, I think, the larger problem with modern economics, which is modern economics is founded on the rational agent model, homo economicus, the idea that people are perfectly rational and somehow we don't have these emotions. We're all like Spock. That said, I think you have to fill your administration with economists. I think Obama has shown some sensitivity and some awareness of behavioral economics, which is trying to tweak the rational agent model and make it a bit more realistic.
Jonah Lehrer is speaking tonight at the Strand with Radiolab's own Robert Krulwich. That's tonight at 8:30. You can find information at our website. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. The new book by Jonah Lehrer, no relation, is called How We Decide. I think we made a good decision having you on today. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.